is August 15, 2000, and I am conducting the first interview with Ms. Lorene Burkhart. This interview is part of a pilot project that will, over the long run, build a library of oral history interviews on the general subject of philanthropy. Co-sponsors are the IUPUI Archives and Special Collections and the Department of History at IUPUI. The co-sponsors have received considerable help from the IU Center on Philanthropy. The interviewer is Dr. Philip V. Scarpino, Chair, Department of History. Ms. Burkhart was born in Vincennes, Indiana. Her father was an Undersecretary of Agriculture under President Truman, and her mother was active in the Vincennes community. She attended Purdue University and graduated in 1956 with a degree in home economics. Purdue recognized her with an honorary Doctor of Letters in 1997. This action on Purdue's part acknowledged a lengthy service to the university, including the donation of $1 million in 1993 to establish the Center for Families. A former home economics teacher, Ms. Burkhart had a long career in business, including Director of Consumer Services, Reuben Montgomery & Associates, 1972 to 1975, Director of Consumer Services, Genair Corporation, 1975 through 78, and Strategic Planning, Foods and Dairy Division, Borden Incorporated, 1981 to 1983. She was the founder, owner of the Women's Investment Network, 1983 through 85, owner of the Register, 1992 through 98, and chairman of Metro Magazines Incorporated, 1997 through 98. Ms. Burkhart worked in media in various capacities, including a syndicated radio show, 1967-68, a daily radio show on WXLW, 1967 through 70, New News on WTHR 1970-71, and a one-hour TV show on Channel 16 1994 through 95. Ms. Burkhart has a long and impressive list of civic and volunteer activities, including service on a number of boards of directors and trustees, such as the Indiana Historical Society 1997 to the present and the Indianapolis Museum of Art 1988 to the present. Among other things, she raised more than $1 million for the Indianapolis Museum of Art. She has volunteered and raised funds for organizations devoted to the arts, youth, the elderly, healthcare, and education. Ms. Burkhart has won numerous awards and recognitions for her philanthropic work, among them the National Spirit of Philanthropy Award given by Kappa Alpha Theta in 1998, and she was named a Most Influential Woman by the Indianapolis Business Journal in 1996. Well, the tape recorder's on, and I'd like to thank you very much for agreeing to this interview. And as I explained before I turned the recorder on, I need to ask your permission to record this interview, to have the tape transcribed, and to have the transcription and the tape placed in the IUPUI Archives and Special Collections. Could I have your permission to do that?
Yes, you could.
Okay, thank you very much. I'd like to start with a really easy question, and that is, when and where were you born?
I was born on a farm just outside of Vincennes, Indiana. In 1934, midsummer, at home.
At home, and the date was?
July 11th.
July 11th, 1934. Mm-hmm. And who were your parents?
My mother was Emma Bobe, B-O-B-E, which I believe in the part of Germany that her family came from was probably called Bobe, married my father, Clarence McCormick. And so she became Emma Bobe McCormick. And they were both from that area, lived about 5 miles apart, and met at the little country church.
Do you remember offhand when they were married?
No, I don't.
That's fine.
I don't remember.
What was the denomination of the church?
It was Methodist. They would have been married in the early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you remember about your parents? What stands out when you think back about your parents?
Well, I had a very interesting upbringing because my father was... the older I get, the more I appreciate what he was and what he did. He always did at least two or three things at the same time, which is something my brothers and I learned to do also. And so he came from a family of well-educated people, and it was very unusual that in the early 1900s that his sisters and he and his brother, all of them, went to college, and they lived on a farm. So that was very unusual, but I think one of the reasons that they could do that was because Vincennes University was a two-year college and they could live at home and go to Vincennes. But my father was a basketball player, so he received a basketball scholarship to what was called Indiana State Normal, which is now Indiana State University of Terre Haute. So he actually did graduate from college there and went back to the Vincennes area, to the farm area that he grew up near to farm, but also to teach school at Decker High School. And he taught botany and was the basketball coach. My mother came from a very large German family, and mother died, leaving nine children when my mother was seven. She was a middle child. So of that family, only one got to even go on to high school, and the youngest, who was only 3 months old when the mother died, actually was raised by a relative, and he not only went to college but became a medical doctor. But so my mother had only an education through the eighth grade, and so when she and my father married, he was farming and teaching, and very early on he saw the need for farmers to have some sort of help and be organized in some way, and was very involved in the beginning of the Farm Bureau organization, and then took a job with a state farm organization. So by the time I was born in 1934, and I have two older brothers, he actually was working away from home 5 days a week and would come home on weekends then to work on the farm. And then and actually was with the Extension Service at one point out of Purdue University, and was involved with the AAA farm organization, which was a result of, when Roosevelt was president, a result of the Depression and the farm organization that happened after that. So he did that until just before the World War II, and he had just taken a job in Washington, D.C. before the war broke out, and when it did, everyone was frozen in their civilian positions. So he was living in Washington, D.C., and we were living on the farm. And I had a younger brother also, so there were four children and my mother. All right, so what I remember, you see, is a father who was an absentee father, but very much the head of the household, and a wonderful inspiration to me in his constant reaching out as a public servant. A mother who was one of the original liberated women who never intended to be, running a farm, raising children, and being the one that kept it all together. So it, of course, had a tremendous impact on me, especially being the only daughter, of seeing myself in both roles. And growing up with three brothers and in a rural environment where you don't run out and play with people after school because you ride a school bus home and then you do the farm chores. So I learned at a very early age then, of course, about involvement in community, because as many and most rural families at that time, your involvement was with your church and school, where your children went to school, and they didn't have events that parents participated in that much, but they were supportive of like the basketball games and the things that we were involved with. But they were also very involved with their neighbors, and whenever there was a need, then of course all the neighbors helped out. And so I just was born into an environment of being a public servant and being involved in helping others.
What kinds of things did you do, say, in high school?
Well, the only thing that rural children did was 4-H. Mm-hmm. And you start when you're 9 years old, and I was in it for 9 years, and there are all kinds of leadership opportunities in the 4-H organization, which I did. And then in high school, I was often chose to lead whatever the effort was that was happening. And so I was cast in the leadership role over and over in the variety of things that I was involved with. And when I went to college, then immediately went in my first session with a counselor, the freshman do, because I had admired my home economics teacher so much, because back then home ec was a really good thing. And she had come straight from Purdue back to this little school that she had attended, and I wanted to be just like she was, so I asked the counselor at Purdue, what are the honoraries, and how do you, what do you have to do to qualify to be selected for those? And I had my checklist and just went down the list. So if there's a freshman honorary, that's what I did. Then the next one, the sophomore honorary, and you know, so on and so forth. So so I, of course, was very involved in college, because you aren't tapped for these honoraries just because you have a nice personality. So it was either based on grades, or it was based on activities, or a combination. So I think that I was much more oriented to activity than I was to the concept of giving money, although, of course, I saw my parents put money in the collection plate at church all the time, and I knew that they gave to other things that went on in the community. But as a child, you aren't really tuned into that very much.
Did your parents, or was it this teacher that inspired you to go to college?
Well, my brothers and I just knew we would all go to college, because that was what we did. My father didn't leave any questions on mine about that. Because my mother had not even gone to high school, my oldest brother, who was 10 years older, his wife was a real inspiration to me, in that she had gone to college and she knew about sororities and all that. So she was the person through high school and college that explained to me how things worked. But then the my home ec teacher then was my real inspiration of understanding what I might do as a job. And the only thing that I knew that women did as a job was a home ec teacher or a county extension agent, because those were the only two women I saw, other than other women teachers, to emulate. So of course I took home ec at Purdue to be a home economics teacher. What else?
So role models were important in your life.
Role models were very important.
Did you think about that later on, as your life developed and your career developed? And you became the person, the role model?
Yes. I never, ever turned anyone down who asked to meet with me, no matter what their age and what it is they want to meet about, because I know how important that was to me through the years of having people give me some time to talk about their life or whatever I was needing to know about.
I want to follow a couple of follow-up questions on your father. You said he was involved in the Farm Bureau?
Yes.
What did he do?
He was involved in organizing the local Farm Bureau cooperative. You paid dues. And then I didn't explain that he went on in leadership roles, and he was actually in a farm organization when he was in Washington in World War II. But then he came.
And what organization was that?
I think it was the Commodity Credit Corporation. And then he was home for a little while, and then he went back to Washington when I was in high school. He was asked by Harry Truman's administration to be the Undersecretary of Agriculture. So he was in Washington while I was in high school, and my younger brother and I were in high school and said, you know, we did not want to move to Washington, and it would have been a real culture shock for these two little farm kids. And so my mother would go to Washington and spend time there, and we stayed at home, but I did go up to Washington a few times. And I did have the honor of going to Eisenhower's inauguration when my father went out of office. And I did know a lot about Washington and about the Truman administration and the Korean War, which took place during that period of time that my father was in Washington. And my father was on a very special committee appointed by Truman to help manage the government.
What was the name of the committee?
It was a management committee, okay. The president's management committee, mm-hmm. Yes. And so he had a good working relationship with Harry Truman, and I have some wonderful framed things with Harry Truman's signature.
Did you meet Harry Truman?
I didn't meet him personally when I went to Washington. Actually, my father was away on a trip out of the country, and I was there at the National 4-H Club camp, and there was a ceremony in the Rose Garden, but I didn't have the opportunity to meet him personally, but he was there in that ceremony.
You said your father also worked with the extension at Purdue?
Mm-hmm.
Briefly, what did he do there?
Some sort of farm program. That was at the time I was born, so I don't remember that. But I know he traveled throughout the state. I think he had a certain area that he covered, and I don't know whether he was meeting with farmers or what he was doing, you know, but I know that he was actually employed by the Extension Service.
So I have it all in one place. How many brothers?
I have three brothers.
And do you remember their dates of birth?
Well, my oldest brother is 10 years older than I am, so I believe he was born in 1925.
And his name?
Jim McCormick. Mm-hmm. And the next brother is 5 years older than I am, so it would have been about 1930. And then I was born in 34, and then my younger brother was born in 1936. And so it's Jim, Don, and Ed McCormick. And they, too, learned to do at least three things at one time, which we all did.
So that's a family trait.
Yes, and still do, yeah. Yes. But our mother was also involved in the community. You know, she was involved in the church. In many ways, she was involved in the Women's Farm Organization. We saw this involvement from the time we were born.
What kind of a farm was the farm that your parents owned?
It was a grain farm, livestock and grain.
Mm-hmm. And you worked on the farm?
My job was the chickens. Mm-hmm. Yes. The women's work, and I was my mother's assistant. Women's work was the house, the garden, and the chickens, and the yard.
Mm-hmm. What was Vincennes like during the time that you were growing up?
Well, Vincennes, early memories, of course, when I was only 6 years old was when World War II broke out, and it there was a very large air base just on the other side of the river from Vincennes. So I have early memories of hundreds of planes flying over our home because it was a gigantic air base, and also a memory of all these soldiers. Whenever we would go into the little town, it was only like 18,000 of all these soldiers all over the town. But also that my oldest brother was sent home from college by the draft board to farm, and he decided to plant all these tomatoes, and he hired German war, he arranged with the air base for the German war prisoners that were stationed, based there, to pick tomatoes on our farm, which was a pretty interesting experience to have the soldiers, around the field with their guns, and have these young men who were so far from home and homesick, I'm sure thrilled to be out on a farm doing anything, you know, rather than being at the air base. But most people didn't realize we had German war prisoners in the center part of the United States. But Vincennes of course, it's a very historical town, so early on I understood the importance of history, and of course the French, not only in the name, but the fact that there were seven large Catholic churches there, and that the town was actually laid out in the French fashion, the streets coming out from the river, so they made no sense whatsoever in terms of north, south, east, and west.
not on a modern grid.
No. And so But then, of course, Vincennes University is the oldest university west of the Alleghenies, and so Vincennes University was always a part of our life, of somebody in the family attending mm-hmm. at some time. And then my father became the chairman of the board of trustees at Vincennes University, and was a trustee for years, and was chairman of the board. And then my oldest brother became the chairman of the board of trustees. And so we've all been involved in a variety of ways, and supporting it financially as well as in other ways. And then the science center at the university is named in honor of my parents.
Mm-hmm. If I could somehow manage to get a history time machine and go back to Vincennes at the time when you were a teenager and just walk on the streets, what would I see?
Well, you would have seen on Main Street Gimbel Bond, which was a department store that was actually started by Mr. Gimbel from New York, of the Gimbel store, which was pretty interesting that that happened to be there. And at the north, I guess it was north, must have been the west, I don't know, you never could tell which direction you were going in, the street closest to the river, where Main Street ended, was actually where George Rogers Clark Memorial was, in that area. And if you just, you know, continued on that main street, you would run right into the river. And there was the Lincoln Bridge that covered, you know, spanned the White Wabash River. You would have seen a bustling little town of busy Main Street with the two banks located on Main Street, and the department stores, and the little specialty shops, and that's where everybody went, and that's where we went from the farm on Saturday morning, mm-hmm. and seldom any other time. So my mother and I would take the eggs to the hatchery, and then get our $20, whatever they paid us for the eggs, and then we would go shopping, and we would do whatever we needed to do. And on Main Street, she would go to the bank, and we would do our little chores and shop and have lunch at one of the wasn't called a tea room, but a little restaurant in, I think they were actually, one of them was actually in one of these department stores, mm-hmm. so that was always a big thrill for me. And then we would end by going, stopping at the grocery for a few things. And we didn't need to buy very much because we had most things on the farm. And the last stop was always at the frozen food locker because we didn't have deep freezes, as they called them at the beginning. We had our own meat, so it would be slaughtered and then it would be taken directly from the abattoir to the frozen food locker, and then that would be our last stop on the way home, and we would have these big grocery bags, and Mother would run in, and it'd be all frosty and cold, and you'd unlock your box, it was like a big drawer, like a file drawer, and get your meat for the week, you know, and then take it home and put it in your freezer above your refrigerator. So Vincennes, and we would see people that we knew as we were, you know, around in the streets, and even though I didn't know very many people in Vincennes, because we lived out on the farm and I went to a rural school, but we would see various mm-hmm. Folks that we knew.
How far out of town was your farm?
7 miles. Mm-hmm. 7 miles from Vincennes, but actually the school that I went to, I had to go to the school of the township I lived in, and it was 14 miles into Decker High School, where it was only about 6 miles to the grade school that I went to, but 14 miles to Decker, so it was an hour bus ride each way to high school and back. And actually, there were a couple of other schools that were actually closer to where we lived, but we had to go to the school of the township we lived in.
What was the name of the elementary school?
Purcell.
Purcell
Grade School. And this was where, this was interesting that there was a Catholic grade school, St. Thomas, and a Lutheran grade school, and then Purcell Grade School was the public school. But the buses picked up all those children, see, and they brought them to Purcell. And then you got, in my case, I stayed there since that's where I went to grade school. But then the children that went through the parochial schools got on the Lutheran bus or the St. Thomas bus. And now I look back and think, isn't that interesting? We were using public tax dollars to transport these children to their parochial schools. I didn't, of course, no one thought about it at the time.
It's an interesting arrangement, though, isn't it?
Yes. And then when I was in high school, that's where I would get on the high school bus. So I would ride to Purcell through eighth grade, and then I would get on the high school bus to go on to Decker.
Let's see. You went to Purdue in about 1952?
I right? did.
Did I get that figured out?
You did. Good job.
Okay. And you, why Purdue?
Well, because of my mentor, the home ec teacher. And that was where, of course, my dad had been involved with the Extension Service at Purdue. And it was the logical place, if I wanted to be a home ec teacher, I guess it wasn't necessarily, because my cousins were home ec teachers and they went to Indiana State for home ec. So I think it was because of my mentor, my home ec teacher, who went to Purdue. And then, of course, my oldest brother had gone there before he had to come home in World War II.
Well, I remember in reading information we gathered on you, and also in talking to you a few weeks ago, that you've had quite a bit of loyalty to Purdue over the years.
I have.
What happened during your undergraduate career to help to develop that loyalty?
Well, because of my orientation to be involved in wherever I am, I was president of different organizations as an undergraduate, and then when I married my first husband, and I lived in Cincinnati, but when we moved back to Indianapolis, I actually then had the opportunity to start being involved in the home ec alumni organization from Purdue. And it was a way for me to stay connected to the university and through to friends that I had met there, and many of the professors I had, of course, were still there. So it was a nice connection for me. And then I also felt very strongly about being involved in my professional organization of home economics.
And the name of that organization?
Well, at that time I was in the Indiana Home Economics Association, but then because I wasn't working full-time, my teaching was done in Cincinnati, and when we moved to Indianapolis I wasn't working full-time because I had two young children, and so they had one section that was called Home Economists and Homemaking, and these were women who had college degrees in home economics that weren't working full-time. So it was a perfect place for me to maintain my professionalism, and actually through that organization I learned about some jobs that I later had, because we were very supportive of each other, of knowing about freelance jobs that were available. And so I remained involved at Purdue because I had so many friends there, both in the faculty as well as women who had graduated around my time.
Well, just for the record, what was your first husband's name?
George Shunk, S-H-U-N-K.
And what year were you married in?
I was married in 1955, between my junior and senior year in college. And he had already graduated, so he got a job in Lafayette, and then I stayed and finished my senior year.
And you said you had two children, mm-hmm. and their names are?
Mark Shunk and Stuart Shunk, and they are now, Mark was born in 1957, and Stuart was born in 1960.
Mm-hmm. What attracted you to Cincinnati?
My husband's job. Mm-hmm. And I had a child who was 1 year old when we moved there. We had lived temporarily, we moved from Lafayette after I graduated, and lived for, I don't know, nearly a year, I think, in Vincennes, when my husband was in a management training thing there. And actually, I was offered a position at Vincennes University to teach home economics, but we knew that we were going to move to Cincinnati. But when I got to Cincinnati, we moved in midwinter, and so then during the next summer, I applied for a teaching job in Cincinnati, and began my teaching then that next fall when my youngster was not quite 2 years old. and taught home economics at Hughes High School, which was a big six-year school. And I taught 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, which was a very interesting experience for my first year of teaching of quite a mixed bag of youngsters.
You mentioned when we visited several weeks ago that this was quite challenging.
It was very challenging. It was challenging in that growing up on a farm in southern Indiana, I really had, through no fault of mine, very little contact with African Americans. And that was very typical of that era of the early 50s, or, you know, during that period of time. And at Purdue, there was only one African-American girl that I had any contact with. She lived in my dorm my freshman year. And she had a private room and, you know, really didn't socialize. So I had never had the opportunity to know any African Americans, and I didn't have a feeling one way or the other. I just had never had an experience. Well, it turns out that I had a predominance of African American children in the classes at this high school, because it was a large high school across from University of Cincinnati that had been quite an elegant area of Hyde Park, but had become a mixed neighborhood. So that was a very new experience for me. And I didn't have any particular problems with them at all. But I look back and realize how naive I was in that I didn't acknowledge that their skin color was